Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for June 11th, 2017. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
All right, good to have y'all both on. We've only been a week since we've been with you, but it seems like about a month worth of political stories have happened since then. We're going to cover what we can, and also we're having a great guest on, David Mark, who is a longtime friend of the show. He is going to come on again tonight. This is the first time as an editor of Morning Consult that he's been on, so we're going to talk to David about that publication as well as some more political stuff here in a little bit. But until then, you know, there's so many things all week long, but Thursday seemed like one of the biggest political days. I mean, other than a general election day kind of thing, you really couldn't get much bigger than Thursday. And there was an election, so that's part of it. But there was the James Comey testimony. Before we get into what was said, I was just amazed at how big the coverage was. I happened to catch, as I was on vacation, CBS, and I'm not sure if other networks did this, they preempted coverage of regular, I guess, Price is Right or soap operas or whatever it might have been, and showed the Comey testimony. Catherine, did you notice how much coverage it got, and what did you see preempted, that kind of thing?
Well, I was on vacation in the mountains, and we didn't have very good internet, and I didn't watch any of it. I was sitting on a deck looking at nature.
Okay. Yeah, well, I was on vacation too, but I happened to go in a restaurant, had TVs, and I noticed the CBS still, because I was like, who's covering this? Because I didn't recognize, you know, the CNN, Fox, any of those companies. And I was like, CNN? I was like, that's different. Well, Tim...
Manuals was open and people were going there, and you know there were bars open all over the country early to watch it, which I thought was an interesting occurrence.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, like a sporting event, covering it with bars and things like that. Tim.
I arranged my schedule at work so that I could just happen to be doing the desk part of my job when the hearing happened. So I got to watch the entire thing on my computer. I forgot who I think Yahoo, well, everybody practically was live streaming the thing. I think I watched it on Yahoo, and it was riveting. You know, it had huge, huge television ratings for something like this. Like you mentioned before we went on the air, one of the biggest congressional hearings in recent memory. I think it probably outdrew the Benghazi thing with Hillary Clinton.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
I noticed a couple of times I had to get up and go out and walk by like our main break room where the television's on. Generally, they have it on Sports Center or some judge show or The Price is Right or something like that. But they had this on. And they were people that normally would not be politically engaged were sitting there watching it. So this thing really got some saturation coverage. It had high interest. And it had a little something for everybody. Trump even tried to claim it vindicated him. I'm not. When you're called a liar five times, and you're practically accused of obstruction of justice without the man just coming out and saying it. I think he's got some he's got more problems coming out of that hearing than he had going in it. So
yeah, Tim, one reason it might have gotten a little bit better coverage than Benghazi hearings is because there was a little more there. Also, it wasn't, 12 hours or however long that went on.
Yeah, she had 11 hours.
Same question. And so, you know, and it was concise and to the point. I heard, you know,
now,
what I got recapped later, I did hear that it was very different in what most Democrats and most Republican senators asked. Most of the Democratic senators were asking pointed questions to James Comey, trying to get information out there. A lot of Republicans were playing defense. Not all. I think I heard Richard Burr actually ask some tough questions, but a lot of them were kind of, you know, preemptively trying to defend Donald Trump. Tim, do you think that was a correct assumption or analysis?
Yeah,
some gave.
I really thought that Chairman Burr did a very good job. I've got to give the man his due. He was very good. He gave the ranking Democrat senator from Virginia there his fair amount of time. It was well done, and Chairman Burr did ask some pretty tough questions. One thing that everyone was talking about after it was over was what was up with John McCain. He seemed a little disjointed, as if he started asking questions about emails last year, and you know, but that was what blew the internet up after the thing was over. People saying, what was going on with John McCain? Did you see any of his line of questions?
I read about it. I did not see it. So it was just emails pertaining to the Hillary Clinton campaign or other emails.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
I mean, hear there was some brought up about that.
He was asking year-old questions that basically had nothing to do with what we're talking about now. And he just, it was almost like he seemed confused or something. I don't know what had happened to him. He blamed it later on sleep deprivation, but he just seemed a little very out of sorts.
Go ahead, Catherine.
I don't think that's anything new. I think we've seen a little bit of that over the course of time. You know.
This was pretty bad. He'll be 82 in August, and he looked it the other day. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I do know that one of the, you know, the lines of attacks, usually people that aren't quite as politically sophisticated as John McCain, when something gets brought up about whatever Donald Trump's done, they go, but Hillary Clinton, and it's like, That dog hunt doesn't.
No, this was
because
like
we're
this
Donald
was
Trump
like,
president, Henry
no,
Hillary
this
Clinton.
This was more like somebody mentioned something about a meeting with Trump, and John McCain was like, but Hillary Clinton ate a piece of lemon chiffon pie. I mean, it was that disjointed. It just really the things he was talking about were not even fitting in with what they were talking about. And the questions just seemed a little bizarre, and I caught more than one eye looking at him like, what? So
yeah,
I did see
the Twitter gifs of the senators all kind of looking around, and so that's why it was, you know, kind of gave you some context. Now, one thing that was kind of interesting about this, go ahead, Tim.
I was just going to say, would you guys not have I was going to mention Kamala Harris, the senator from California, who really her star took a dramatic rise the other day. She engaged former Director Comey in a series of questions about Jeff Sessions, among other things. And Comey kept having to say, I can talk about that in closed session, but not now. And it was like five or six questions in a row. And the next thing you hear is that Sessions is going to be testifying in closed session himself this coming week. And wouldn't you have loved to have been a fly on the wall when they went into closed session the other day just to see what that was all about, if for no other reason?
Yeah, I heard about that. The whole Jeff Sessions storyline is very interesting. We found out earlier in the week that he offered his resignation to Donald Trump because Donald Trump's angry with him because he recused himself of the investigation. There's probably going to be James Comey mentioned that there was three meetings, not two, with the Russians. One's enough to implicate, but apparently there's mention of a third meeting. And so there's just so much, much more smoke, almost to the point of fire. And now he's going to have to testify. I wonder, Catherine, Tim, do y'all know, can those hearings somehow be made public, or can another hearing be made public where Jeff Sessions has to testify in public, or will it, because he's attorney general, have to be closed session?
I don't know the answer to that. I think it depends on the content of the, you know, I think it just depends on what the content is, doesn't it?
I don't know what the backroom shuffling, you know, behind the scenes shuffling might have been. He just ups and offers to testify in closed session, and they took him up on his offer, and there they go. I don't know if he is doing that under the guise of national security stuff or top secret stuff or what is going on here. But that was was the offer they took.
I think Senator Kamala Harris from California, if she thought that it didn't require a closed-door session, that she would work hard to release that information or make those sessions public. She's very cool. She's, we need to keep our eye on her.
Yeah, I think her stock is rising quickly. I was very impressed, and I wasn't the only person who mentioned that on the internet.
If you
either,
have the chance, there's a great interview with her on Todd Save America from 6 weeks ago or so. It's really good. We're definitely worth listening to.
Well, now, how would you feel if you were the state of Alabama and you had your governor go down in flames in a sex scandal that then was more about the cover-up and money involved? Now the fellow that was your junior senator, he becomes the attorney general. He's rising, and his star is falling as fast as anybody in American politics right now. And on top of all this, they say that you can make an argument that Alabama is the most Republican state, and yet their politics are the most entwined with scandal of any state right now. Catherine, what do you think this says about Alabama politics?
Well, it says what we've always known about Alabama politics, that it's a mess over there. But also,
yeah, really.
I mean, you'd have to think, you know, well, here we are, we lost our senator, so now we're paying for a special election, which is all jacked up with the timing and stuff, to elect a new senator. But our, you know, former senator, who's now the attorney general, has offered to resign. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, can't win for losing. But, I mean, they should be happy to be rid of him.
Yeah, and then he, of course, made a horrible move. If he resigns, he basically, the election to replace him permanently will have happened after he would be out of a job, seemingly, if the resignation does come. Tim, thoughts on Alabama and the state of their politics?
Well, interestingly enough, in our little county here, we are having our dinner in August, and Ron Sparks, who was running the Office of Rural Development over there with the new governor, Ivy, She doesn't like him, so she abolished the office, and out he goes. And he is strongly, I don't know if he's made his announcement official yet, but I believe he's going to run against her for governor, and he's coming over to speak to us at our dinner in August. I'm very interested to hear what he has to say about what is going on over there in that state, because it is, frankly, right now just a zoo. It is. It's almost like a soap opera. It's like Mark Sanford on steroids or something.
Let me
ask you this, David.
Yeah, he ran for governor.
Why are the Republicans not paying a price at the ballot box over there?
Well, you've still got two elections on the 20th of June, and hopefully it could be a double play, but at least one of those elections, more likely being Georgia 6, that will be where they pay, at the ballot box. Also, I think this past week, we need to get deep into it because it was just primaries, but New Jersey had their primaries.
Yeah, but that's not
governor,
Alabama.
And they'll have their election. You mean one that paying Alabama? I thought you meant nationwide. Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Alabama, it's going to be interesting to see if anything happens in the Senate special Senate election, in the gubernatorial election. I agree. Now, they did have that weird election result with Martha Roby, where she was one of the more outspoken Republican Trump critics, and she underperformed every other Republican on the ballot. And in that district, and people, pointed to that, although that would mean that they are more Trumpian than the average Republican is. I wonder if that'll change and people would reward Martha Roby. I mean, seemingly if you said I'm a Republican, but I want good government, somebody like Martha Roby that actually would speak truth to power should be rewarded, not punished. But in November 2016, she was punished. So as time goes on, we'll kind of see, how it fleshes out. But Alabama politics are very underrated as far as a drama storyline, although I think people are kind of figuring out it's just that they're so one-sided in recent memory. But, you mentioned Ron Sparks. He was agriculture commissioner, very popular, would win re-election when Republicans were winning elsewhere on the ballot, and then he ran for governor, and he ran in, one of these 2010, 2014 years. I forget which one. I forget if he was 10 or 14, but just bad Democratic years across the board, so it's hard to judge anything. 2018 should be a much better year. Will that nomination be much more valuable to have? I would think so. Tim, do you think it's going to be more valuable in 2018 and he is more of a realistic
shot? It'll be more valuable in 2018 than it was when he previously ran in 2010. Yeah, that was a horrific
2010,
year.
Yes,
it was 2010 he ran against Riley.
But 2018 in Alabama is going to be a rough year. They've got that ballot initiative on abortion. It's going to be a rough year for us.
Interestingly enough, Polling Report, who's my source for finding the Gallup tracking numbers, they had a little one that was brand new, today's date, pro-choice, pro-life, and they don't have a lot of polls on that. But it had legal in all cases, legal in some cases, illegal in all cases. And I don't remember the exact numbers because I just didn't think this was going to come up with a topic. But if you added up legal in all cases and legal in some cases, it was about 70. It was over 70%.
Oh, yeah.
Because illegal in all cases was like 18%.
Those are not new numbers, David. David, no, that's not new. It's been that way for a long time.
Well, this particular poll was a reinforcement old numbers, but it was a new poll today.
Right, but those numbers have stayed. Those are strong numbers. They've been staying that way for years. But
I know that's nationwide. That's not Alabama.
Wait, David. Yeah, that was a national poll.
Yes.
Alabama's a little bit different.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I know it's a national poll, not Alabama. I said I know that the numbers would be a little different, but those numbers would not be, you know, a lot of times when you put these ballot initiatives on the ballot, a lot of times you won't slam dunk numbers that, you know, is going to get you anything. I wouldn't call those slam dunk numbers necessarily, but maybe Alabama's different. Don't know.
Alabama's a lot different. Trust me, I know.
Yeah. No, I mean, so, well, waiting for our guests to call in any minute, but let's kind of give it another minute with, here we go. I was going to mention about James Comey, but let's go ahead and welcome on our guest for the, I don't know how many times now, welcome to the show, David Mark. Welcome, David.
Hey, good to be back with you.
Good to have you. I was thinking back, and you've come on as a member of Politico, as an independent political author of books, a member of CNN Politics Online, and now of the Morning Consult. Probably our guest that's worn the most different hats as a guest we've ever had.
Yeah, it's been an interesting few years. I was at Politico for a good chunk of my career as a political journalist, and I was out in Silicon Valley, and I was at CNN. That was mostly a contract. That was basically a contract position for the election cycle in 2016. And now I'm doing something a bit different, but still related. Morning Consult is a polling data firm that does primarily business, but also some political polling. In fact, it's a polling partner with Politico. So in a sense, coming full circle.
Yes, I noticed that. I think I forgot Politics with an X. You came on when you were in politics. That was in Silicon Valley. Yes, I noticed that Morning Consult, I noticed that polls, a lot of times the polling partners up. Now, is Morning Consult just a online publication, or is there a print component? What all are ways can people get it?
Yeah, it's just online, morningconsult.com, which is, you know, how people get it, of course, on mobile, et cetera, but primarily on online. And you subscribe, you can get all kinds of brand tracking information. If you're running a business, you want to see how your brand is, how people perceive it, also how it compares to competitors. And then on the political side, there is a range of polling for all the governors and senators, and we're working on House members as well to make that presentable. But at this point, top statewide elected officials.
Yes, I've seen those tracking numbers as well. Well, getting into some political talk, you've written, I think, two pieces that I could find since you've been with Morning Consult. The most recent one, and maybe the most lengthy one, was about Sam Brownback in Kansas, a very Republican state in which Sam Brownback has taken down the popularity of himself and the Republican Party, although we hadn't seen any seats flip. Kind of give us a synopsis of what's going on in Kansas. What's the matter with it?
Yeah, it's nice to be able to write these stories again. I spend most of my time as an editor these days, working with reporters on their stories, but I'm still able to do some writing here. And what's great about this company is we have this kind of treasure trove of polling data on these elected officials. And I got interested in tracking how popular or unpopular Governor Sam Brownback of Kansas is, because just this past week, he actually had his signature tax cut program reversed, not by Democrats in the state, of course, because Kansas is heavily GOP, but by Republicans in the state legislature. After he was elected in 2010, he pushed through this massive tax cut program that didn't just cut marginal state income tax rates, but also all kinds for businesses, for independent contractors, blew a hole in the budget, and it had almost immediate effects. Public services plummeted in some cases. The cuts to education were so bad that some school districts had to cut back school to 4 days a week, and you can just imagine what that does for workforce development. Most importantly, the economy was lagging in Kansas. Job growth was down. It was really lagging behind pretty severely its neighbors, Kansas, Iowa, Missouri, Colorado to the west, and some of the Oklahoma, some of the others. And finally, Republicans had enough. They said, we need to get more money into the coffers, and both chambers overrode his veto.
Wow, that is something in Kansas. If they don't do something like that, I guess they looked at that special election, and they'll actually start to lose at the ballot box if they don't change. As you did this research, did you happen to look any at that special election, or was that kind of old news and this was in-state business?
Yeah, this was more state level because I was really interested in Brownback specifically because this Hughes was kind of hailed as a model as Republican governor and something that could be emulated on the national level. And Brownback always sort of thought it that way himself. Of course, when he was pushing this through, he called it a grand experiment. And, of course, people don't like – voters, taxpayers don't like to be experimented on. They just want to – get through their days, raise their kids, be able to provide for their family, get ahead, maybe go to a baseball game every so often, et cetera. But being part of a grand experiment doesn't usually play so well. So I think sort of the way that Brownback messaged this may be contributed to it. And I think it could have some other Republican governors running scared about this, that you can't just have these massive tax cuts without some kind of corresponding increase in revenue, and it doesn't really just grow itself. It was really an experiment in supply side economics, and that just didn't really work out. The economy just did not grow the way that Brownback and his supporters had predicted.
Yes. Well, speaking of 4-day schools, I'm going to send it up to Tim in Chattooga County. Georgia's home with a 4-day school week for a while now, but Tim's probably going to take it a little more national. With the topic du jour of almost every week, Donald Trump. Tim?
Oh, did Donald Trump do something this week? Oh, well, I'm going to ask you the question that every network has been asking in these words and devoting a huge segment to it. Who was the winner, James Comey or Donald Trump?
Well, as much as I love political horse races and all that, I hate to look at it quite that way because the issues are so serious, Russian meddling in the election. But I do think James Comey has a lot more credibility on this than the president. And I think what really boosted Comey's credibility was his reputation going in. Also, the fact that he openly admitted leaking to the New York Times about having written those memos right after his meetings with Trump, which did not necessarily make him look so great, look kind of self-serving and protective, but also probably a smart move under the circumstances. So I think Comey always has this kind of approach of radical transparency, as he calls it, and I think he tried to apply that to the situation with Trump. I think what's most compelling there was sort of what he didn't say explicitly, which was whether independent special counsel to the Justice Department, Robert Mueller, the former FBI director, is investigating Trump for obstruction of justice. Now, Comey did say that Trump was not under investigation for meddling, collusion with Russia, but he pointedly declined to say the same thing about obstruction of justice with Trump, and we'll see where that goes.
Well, was it purposeful? He has been described as a classic law witness or a classic facts witness and would leave those that he was talking to form their own conclusions about it. Do you think that was what he was doing?
I do, although it was really fascinating to hear former Director Comey speaking rather candidly. You know, as FBI director, he was always so careful choosing his words, as you would expect the leader of the FBI to be. But in this case, unless it was classified information, which he had to take into closed session with the Senate Intelligence Committee, he was pretty open in relaying his conversations with the president and how uncomfortable that made him feel, and really questioning why he was even invited into these meetings in the first place, which are just awfully inappropriate, right, to the extreme, really. And whether or not they're illegal, yeah, that's something else. But clearly, Trump should not have been calling these meetings up with the FBI director. So I still think Comey probably came out on top here.
And politically speaking, how are we to gauge the reaction of the administration and of the president to this testimony, what they had to say about it?
Well, they seem awfully defensive. The attorney for President Trump in a private capacity is kind of a bulldog New York lawyer who came out very aggressively against Comey. One thing he seemed to get wrong was saying that Comey somehow disclosed classified information and that meeting between them was not classified. You can say whether it was prudent, wise, et cetera, for Comey to disclose that, whether it makes him look good and proper down the line. But it's not illegal. It happens in memoirs all the time where politicians disclose information and conversations. Mm-hmm. And there's no real legal violation there.
Mm-hmm. And one more thing related to this testimony that I wanted to ask you about, and then I'll turn it over to Catherine for some questions. But the name of Jeff Sessions is really starting to come out a lot. It came out in this exchange between Senator Harris of California and Director Comey, who had to deflect questions about him to the closed session, which raised a lot of antenna. And the next thing we know, we have the Attorney General offering to testify. And senators are saying, wait a minute, what's going on here? And there's actually some debate in the Senate about why he's doing this, what he is up to. What is your take on what is happening there?
Yeah, one of the more interesting stories to emerge, news stories from this past week, was in the New York Times, suggesting there's some real tension between President Trump and Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Trump did not like Sessions' move to recuse himself from the Russia probe, though he really had mm-hmm. to. There's just no way he could have kept that on. I think that really speaks poorly to Trump's judgment that he even fathomed that was okay. It's interesting, Sessions gave up a safe Senate seat to take this job. Now, he chose to do that. Mm-hmm. It's hard to have a lot of sympathy for him, but it's fascinating that he's facing such tension with Trump so quickly, and he might be one of the earlier members of the cabinet to depart. But, yeah, that's getting ahead of ourselves. But you can see why Sessions probably does not appreciate being put in the situations.
Wow. Well, thank you, sir. And with that, I will throw it over to Catherine.
Hey, Mark, thanks for being on with us tonight. We really appreciate it. I'm sorry, David.
That's okay.
That really happens to you, Larry.
Yeah, I got my whole life.
I want to get to Kansas for a minute. Because I think that, you know, this supply-side economics that they were experimenting with clearly isn't working. And I wonder if you think that will have any impact on – I mean, because it's really the same thing that Trump keeps talking, that our president keeps talking about, is if we cut taxes, it'll increase jobs. It'll, you know, improve, but it didn't work in Kansas. So, do you think that right. we'll learn a lesson from that, or is it going to be called out as it's going to be called out? Well, they didn't do it right, or they went too far, or whatever. You know, some kind of lame excuse. So do you think that will we learn from that, we as a country?
Well, that's sort of what the line Grover Norquist is pushing, Americans for Tax Reform, that, yeah, it wasn't implemented right, that maybe it didn't go far enough, et cetera. I think most importantly, it's worth noting there really is no tax reform package, certainly not coming from the White House, and there's really real divisions within Congress, even among Republicans, about what kind of program to push. And it seems more likely that they're going to try and push through just a straight tax cut, which is great. I'd love a tax cut. I'm sure we all would. But you also have to look at what that does to the deficit, public services, the economy in the not-too-distant future, et cetera. So this is something that I'd like to think would be taken to heart nationally, but I don't really think that's the case. Paul Ryan, the House Speaker, seems pretty intent on pushing through some kind of tax program. Republicans likely have the votes to do it, although it may get tricky in the U.S. Senate because of, not to get too deep in the weeds here, reconciliation rules where they could try and push something like that through with 50 votes. But we'll see. That may not work. But I don't think the issue is dead, and maybe other Republican governors will take heed and be careful, but it's hard to see that.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. We don't learn from these experiences, and then we just do it all over again. But back to Comey and Trump, and I want to talk a little bit. I think I'm glad that that Tim brought up Jeff Sessions, because it always struck me as a strange pick for President Trump, because Sessions is such a social conservative and he's such a nut job, really. It seemed like a strange pick for him, because they don't seem to be very compatible in, Jeff Sessions is kind of it just struck me as strange. It seemed like a strange marriage. And, and now that they're, coming to, sort of coming to terms with some of that, what happens to Jeff Sessions? Does he, I guess earlier in the week there was a rumor that he offered to resign. Is that likely to happen?
Well,
I mean,
about Jeff Sessions, agree with him or not, like him or not, he's very disciplined as a politician.
Yeah.
He overcame that issue where he was actually rejected for a federal district court judgeship 31 years ago, basically because of race-tinged issues. And then he was U.S. attorney for a dozen years in Alabama. He was like a state attorney general. Then he propelled himself up to the U.S. Senate. It was for a seat he held for 20 years. And you could just see how that style might clash with somebody like Donald Trump, who is freewheeling, does not like formal plans, and just kind of
You could never call President Trump disciplined.
Right. And
not in the first 1,000 words that comes to mind when describing him.
Right. I don't even think his staunchest supporters would call him that. But Sessions, may have to watch his back a bit legally. He's actually now going to testify this week before the Senate Intelligence Committee. Apparently, and this is just based on news reports that came out after the Comey meeting, I think it was one of the senators who said this, that apparently there was disclosure of another meeting between Sessions and the Russian ambassador to the United States that he had not put on his security form that you need to enter the administration, or in his previous rounds of Senate testimony. Basically, it was a sin of omission. It just clearly should have been put out there publicly. So I'm sure he's going to get grilled on that. I'll be fascinated to see what the city attorney general of the United States says over that. But he's probably got his own private lawyer at this point. Goodness.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I'm going to pass it back to David now. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Yes. Well, David, kind of changed a little bit of gears, but still related to, national politics. Donald Trump is so deep into all the James Comey, Russia hearings, all these things, but he still wants to pass a legislative agenda. And the issue that seems to be the biggest lightning rod, because it affects so many people, is health care. They finally got a bill passed through the House, which actually seemed unlikely when it happened, but it still has to pass through the Senate, and it has to go through reconciliation, like you mentioned, with other bills. What does all of this scandal do to the chances of any type of health care legislation being passed?
Well, that's the thing, and I think helps explain why House Speaker Paul Ryan, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and basically most of the congressional Republicans are sticking with Trump. Even if they don't like these individual actions, they're not calling him to the carpet to resign, anything remotely like that. They're basically just trying not to talk about it. And really, he's still a warm body that will sign their bills for tax cuts and health care. they may not like his style or a lot of the other things he does, but unlike has Hillary Clinton been president or when Barack Obama was in the White House, there won't be vetoes most likely of these bills. So it's like if they can just kind of keep their heads down and focus on policy, they can probably still push through these things. And if folks don't like these measures, they have to register their voices and protest with their lawmakers, et cetera. But Republicans probably still have the votes to enact their agenda, even if it has gone slower. And there's actually now talk about canceling at least part of the congressional recess for August because there's so little has been accomplished. Most of what Trump has done to this point has been through executive orders, ironically, which he criticized Obama for so much, but very little on the legislative front. And Republicans in Congress are pretty good at just kind of keeping their heads down. It was like that congressional candidate in Montana who body slammed the reporter and just pled guilty to assault. And, you know, the story just kind of was there for a couple days and then moved on, and he'll be soon enough be a member of Congress. So it's just kind of the way these things work.
Yes, things move fast. Well, one more question before we let you go, and it relates to the British election. Now, I know that the analysis of that, we can't really do quick justice to, but today's news, following the British election being so close, you could simply even say that the Conservative Party won. Some say they lost. It was definitely a loss of a huge lead. And now some people are saying that Theresa May said Donald Trump don't do the state visit because of how it will, you know, look and hurt me and really not be good for you. He's announced that he's not going to go until he becomes more popular. My overarching question is, with his global unpopularity, can Donald Trump really take any more out-of-country visits to find a place where he's not going to get protested and whatnot?
Yeah, he's going to be waiting a good long while, probably long after he's president, to not get booed. That seems like an awfully strange way to plan trips or not plan trips abroad. Every American president gets booed in these places, Democratic and Republican. That I don't think that reflects very well on our country, that the president's kind of afraid to go where he might face some unfriendly protesters. That doesn't really speak too well to his leadership style. It is interesting, though, that Prime Minister May is kind of warning him off. She is in a precarious political position. She's essentially in a hung parliament. She could probably hang on with the coalition, but you also have party rivals like Boris Johnson, the former London mayor, kind of circling around her. So she may not be prime minister for too much longer herself.
Yes, I kind of think that one thing that's hurt her is that she's not seen as somebody that will stand up to Donald Trump like Angela Merkel did, like Macron did, and France. Do you think that's part of it, that she was early on, you know, visited, held his hand, and has not come out tough like these other European leaders?
Yeah, I do think that has a good deal to do with it. And, of course, Trump is aligned with the UK Independence Party, which is, you can call it a far-right party, but it's really more nationalistic. And the head of it, Nigel Farage, actually, after the tragedy on London Bridge, the car crash and the terror attacks, he called for internment of some Muslims in the UK, which just that term has a terrible connotation to it. And that's somebody who's kind of made common cause very overtly with Trump. He's probably his biggest fan in Great Britain. So, yeah, May probably did not help herself a lot by not distancing herself from Trump. And, boy, you hate to see any British leader, any foreign leader for that matter, distance themselves from the U.S. president. It really makes you long for the days of Tony Blair and Bill Clinton, and even Tony Blair and George W. Bush. Just they're very different times, better relationships.
Yes, it seems like a lot of national or world leaders are distancing themselves from Donald Trump. It'd be interesting to see if Paul Ryan ever does. That may be kind of the last shoe drop. Go ahead.
I was going to say only if Trump turns against his tax cuts and health care plans, then all of a sudden
impeachment proceedings might come out of the woodwork pretty quickly. But I don't really – I'm joking. I don't really anticipate that happening, at least not in the near future.
Yes. Well, David, we thank you for joining us. Before you go, tell us if there's anything we should be looking for in the next week or two for Morning Consult.
Well, of course, in your backyard, the special election in Georgia 6 will have some interesting polling related to that. Also, approval ratings from all these senators and governors were certainly worth keeping an eye on. You can find all your home state senators and basically statewide elected officials down there. So definitely worth keeping an eye on.
Oh, good to know. Well, David, thanks again for joining us.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Will do.
That was David Mark, now of Morning Consult. You can get that at just essentially search Morning Consult in any internet device, but morningconsult.com. The polling they do is really, really top-notch, and the stories they have, it's kind of that blend of politics and business. Well, just to kind of segue in an appropriate way, I mentioned a little bit with David about the British election, but we hadn't had to talk about that other big event from Thursday, the British election. Catherine, Theresa May, her party, the Labour Party, started out with roughly a 20-point lead, did not even win enough seats to form a government. They did win a few more seats, but you got the Scottish National Party, UKIP, there's some others. What do you make of what happened to the lead there?
Well, I think we're seeing a lot of nationalism around the world, and I think this was just the latest example of it. I honestly haven't looked at the numbers that closely, but I recognize that it's a big loss for her, and it'll be interesting to see how, you know, it's always interesting with the British, with the Parliament, to see how these things, you know, sort of shake out as the as things settle down a little bit. It'll be interesting, I guess.
Tim, what's your take?
You know, I keep wondering why these prime ministers in England are calling for these elections that they don't have to call.
Yeah,
the former prime minister of England is the former prime minister of England because he did exactly the same thing with the Brexit vote. Now, she does this because she wants to build a bigger majority to say, look, the British people are all behind me in my negotiations with getting us through this Brexit thing. And, you know, leaving the European Union and all that. And what do they take instead? A pasting. I think it was a combination of things. I think one of them you touched on, David, and that's she looked like she was a little too cozy, a little too coddling, a little too deferential toward Donald Trump, while other European leaders have straightened their backbone up and, you know, looked him right in the eye, you know, as an equal, at least, of which she has not given that impression. Another thing is now she is forced to put together a coalition government with a minor party from Northern Ireland. So her position is going to be very precarious. She is going to have to tread very carefully. No party now over there in their system has a majority vote in Parliament. That's one reason I'm glad we got the two-party system in this country, so we don't have to put together coalition governments. So we'd be doing like those countries and putting governments together. Every time you turn around, it leads to some instability. It can't help but lead to instability. So she just did something she shouldn't have done. She called an election she never should have called, and I don't see why they do that. Do you?
No, and it also leads to regionalism. You have a Scottish party. They support
typically more the Labor Party. Then you have this Northern Ireland Party. I don't really know their political leanings. They're throwing in with the Conservatives in this case. That may be to get other things, but that's all regionalism, which is usually not a very healthy thing. The worst time in our country was when people were too deep into regionalism back in the 1860s.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's a good thing. And as far as the British elections, now this is not a statement on today's political climate. This is a more overarching way they do it. In wrestling, there's this new thing called the Money in the Bank. It's been around for maybe 5-6 years. And you win this little match and you get this briefcase. And for the next year, you carry this little briefcase around it. At any time, you can say you want a world championship match and you turn your little briefcase in. And you can have it right after the champion is tired or whatever, and sometimes it backfires. And it's always a bad guy that seems to win this thing because it looks so smarmy and weak. And that's what this British election system seems. It's just, oh, well, things are going good for me. I'm going to call an election. It may have been 2 years. It may have been 4.5. You have to have it every 5 years. But it just makes no sense. It seems like you could have a set period. Now, I'm not going to say that are 4 for our executives the magic number. 3, 5, maybe 7. I probably wouldn't go any further than like that. But, you know, you should have a set period. I mean, almost everything in life has a both sides know when it's going to happen, be it sports, politics, finances. I mean, you know when Walmart's open, Pepsi and Coke have to sell their stuff then. You don't have just one side or the other gets to, you know, rig the game their way. Catherine, I don't think you got to weigh in on this. What do you think of this, the party in control can decide when to have the election?
The only advantage I see to it is that the election season is short.
Yes.
You know, they call it, whatever, 6 weeks later. I do think that's good, but I agree. It does. It puts a lot of pressure on the ruling party because they have to pick just the right time to do it. But it also puts a lot of responsibility and responsibility on that party to pick the right time. So I don't think it's ideal, but I do think it's nice to have short elections. I think we could benefit from having shorter elections.
I'll concur with you on it does control the time limit. We got time for probably one last topic. And I wanted to discuss last week, couldn't get to. There is a congressional candidate, I guess now we'd have to say former congressional candidate, in Iowa's 4th Congressional District, Kim Weaver. She was going to run against Steve King. No, not the one that writes books, the one that just writes things that are totally crazy, not horror books. And she was going to run against Steve King up in Iowa, but she's dropped out, and she says that she's cited threats to safety and financial security and something – her mother has health problems, and that may have figured in too, but she'd gotten all of these – threats to her life and her livelihood. Steve King's now come out and said he doesn't believe it's even true, although the things Steve King says he does and does not believe are quite a unique list. But the Des Moines Register and Jezebel, a national publication, interviewed Kim Weaver. To me, if she's lying about this, you don't hang a lantern on it. You don't want to, you know, talk to the number one paper in the state and really one of the number one political papers across the country, and a national site like Jezebel. So I would think there would be no advantage to make this up. So I would take it at her word. Catherine, how disheartening is this to our democracy?
It's very disheartening, but not surprising in the climate that has been, you know, building since, you know, probably since Donald Trump began his presidential bid. I mean, I think that he's created an environment of elevated hatred and divisiveness. I mean, I think it's been building for a long time. I feel like he sort of gave voice to some of it more publicly than we saw before. And it's very discouraging to think that, you know, legitimate qualified candidates would not be able to run because of threats and fear for their, you know, like you said, their livelihood and their families and all those kind of things. I think it's very discouraging and disappointing. And it's if it becomes widespread, it is very scary and puts a real damper on, you know, a real democratic system.
Yes, Tim, what do you think of this story and what it means for democracy going forward?
Well, one discouraging thing, one troubling thing that I'm thinking about, does this signal, because it mentions some other cases around the country, does this signal that progressive female candidates in particular are being targeted for intimidation in some of these races? That I find troubling when you're targeting, you know, over half of our population to keep them, you know, from running in political races. It's not that she was an unknown quantity or anything. She ran last year against him. I don't see why anyone would go after her in this fashion other than the fact that she is a female progressive. So I find that very troubling. And moving forward into the future, we're going to have to watch to see if, especially in this era that we've entered, as Catherine mentioned, from basically 2015 when Donald Trump announced till now, if this is going to be more the norm than not as we go forward. That would be very sad if it was.
Yes, apparently in April, someone went into her yard, put a for sale sign up. So this would be an action taken that could be, you know, visibly verifiable. Now somebody could say, oh, well, she bought it and put it up. But, I mean, who in the world is going to do that? And secondly, I do know that this is kind of unfortunately, a classic move in the past, hopefully not now, but in the past, when African-Americans would move into neighborhoods that were predominantly, if not all, white, you know, for sale signs might get put up. What a tacky, horrible intimidation tactic to use or borrow in this case, you know, putting a for sale sign. I mean, obviously the message is, you know, get out of here, leave. We don't want you. You're not one of us. And that gets into, you know, we've heard a lot about siloing and people having groupthink about who's alike near them. And it's a sad state of affairs where if you don't think like us, you can't be our neighbor. Catherine, do you think there's another sign of that type of what's called siloing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, and that combined with the gerrymandering of our congressional districts and then the divisive, you know, the very divided media voices that we have, I think it just all contributes to this sort of us and them approach to politics. It's very sad.
Yes. Tim, this tactic of the actual sign, not just calls, and what does this say about having choice in our election? Even if a district's 80-20, don't people deserve, if people want to run, to have a choice?
Certainly they do, and in no case should anyone be intimidated or threatened with their very life because they choose to step up to the plate and, you know, be a public servant. What have we come to if that's how we rule, by fear and intimidation? Are we any better than countries with dictators if we allow stuff like that to happen? It's extremely troubling.
Yes, I mean, it kind of smacks of Turkey and Erdogan. Now, I will say this, there's absolutely no proof that Steve King orchestrated anything. I mean, this may be people in his district that he would not endorse. He tweeted out that he would rather have her in the district than out. Some may think that he may not want a tougher candidate than her because she does have some kind of internet psychic hotline thing going on. But still, people need to be able to run freely or you don't have a true democracy. And I find this story totally troubling. That's why I wanted to make sure we got to discuss it before too much time went on. Well, that's been the Kudzu Vine for tonight. Thanks again to David Mark, and thanks for listening.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good, common